Hey, buddy, are we like on a sports podcast?
Yeah, yeah. He is a great swamp swummy. Do you need earplugs for your sound holes?
Does this like mean we're actually gonna score?
And welcome back to SwampSwami.com Sports Podcast. Today's story, March Madness, let them all in. Yeah, there's some good news coming for college basketball fans really soon. Both the men's and women's NCAA basketball tournaments are coming up in a few weeks here in March. Given that the tournaments were canceled last year as a result of the pandemic that shut down sports and the rest of your life, this indeed is some great news for sports fans. And this year, though, there are quite a bit of unusual facets to the big dance that we need to be aware of. For the men, all of the tournament games are going to be played in and around Indianapolis, Indiana. And for the women, their entire tournament will be played in the San Antonio, Texas area. From the first round all the way to cutting the nets down at the end, the entire tournaments will be played at those two great American cities. Well, that's the good news. The NCAA has published guidelines for both the men's tournament and the women's tournament. And in a nutshell, let me summarize for you the most important aspects. Number one, every participating conference is going to have an opportunity for at least one team to play in the championship field. That isn't really anything new, as the NCAA generally keeps the smaller conferences happy by putting at least one of their teams into the field to play a supposed giant power school. And you know, those matchups are always the ones that make the first weekend so much fun for us. Number two, once the tournament bracket is finalized and released, though, the teams will not be reseeded, nor will the bracket be changed. Now, this could become important in the event that your favorite basketball team should come down with a COVID outbreak during week number two of the tournament, let's say. The remaining healthy opponent would be awarded that game by forfeit. The moral of this story, you have to beat all of your opponents and COVID to win this year. Number three, if a league champion team cannot participate due to illness, the league may designate a replacement team before the start of this year's tournament. Now, this might seem highly unlikely, but the NCAA is trying to give every conference a chance to have their participants. Number four, if an at-large team, which is a highly rated team that didn't win its own conference, cannot participate in the tournament, the NCAA will then select one of the first four teams, which are numbers 65, 66, 67, or 68, to take the place of the at-large team or teams that's unable to play. As a result, the NCAA would then theoretically put number team 69 into that first four group of teams. You got the idea. Before we proceed onward with this story, the NCAA tournament field of 64 teams is simply a product of mathematics. To win the championship with 64 teams in the field, the winner must go 6-0 to take home the big trophy. 64 teams becomes 32, and then 16, and then 8, and then 4, and then 2, and only one team is left standing. Now, this is normally played over a 3-week period with two games played every weekend. Since the NCAA usually has 32 conference champions, those winners are automatically entered into this field. In many cases, the regular season league champion, though, does not win the end-of-season conference championships. Let the howling begin! So if a regular season champ fails to win its own conference tournament, they are theoretically eligible to be entering the field via the 32 at-large teams. Those teams, though, are chosen by an elite, translated politically connected, group of people assigned by the NCAA. They are usually athletics directors for large schools and former coaches and a few assorted ringers, too.
Excellent.
As the number of conferences has kept increasing, a contingent of unhappy at-large teams will whine if they are omitted from the field after Selection Sunday. It happens every single year. Grab your tiny violin and play a tune for teeny tiny university with a record of 25-5 from the Podunk Conference. Though they won 25 games, and that's very impressive, none of their wins came against a recognizable foe. Oh no, but then the most vocal howling usually comes from the media pundits about the omission of large state university, having a record of 19-16 out of the Blue Bloods Conference. Now, the team was left out of the field despite having played the toughest schedule in the nation. True, but they still lost 16 games. They shouldn't be in the field of 64. To quell some of this whining, the NCAA attempted to placate the fans, the media, and others by creating a unique four-team play-in idea. It's called the First Four. The four lowest-seeded conference champions and the four lowest-seeded at-large teams square off in, you guessed it, four contests on Tuesday and Wednesday night after Selection Sunday. Those four winners take the last four places in the championship round of 64 teams. The entire concept of the NCAA's First Four has been a relatively big yawn. Other than Virginia Commonwealth University, VCU, back in 2011, that's 10 years ago this year, no other team has advanced from First Four all the way into the Final Four at the end. With all the 2021 men's and women's basketball tournaments being held in one location for all six rounds of play this year, I have an idea. Why not expand the field this season and let every basketball team play in the championship? Oh, sure, you're going to say, but there's too many teams, Swamp Swami. Of course there are. According to one source, there are 347 men's college basketball teams playing ball right now. Now, if you do the math, that would require one additional game to expand our field to 128 wins from 64, right? Now, to reach 256 teams, you're talking two additional games. And if all 347 teams wanted in, which is highly doubtful that some would even want to play, let's find out a way we could accommodate everyone if we wanted to this year. Here's my idea, which would add only one full week to the NCAA tournament. Yes, just one week. First, we lock in those top 64 teams in the normal fashion. The conference champs and those top 32 at-large teams will all receive a first week bye. They can rest up and go to school. We'll dedicate the first weekend of my one-time-only SwampSwami.com NCAA All-In Tournament to determine the next 64 teams that will be playing in our new 128-team field. Hang in there with me and I'll explain. For the teams number 65 all the way through, theoretically, 347, we're going to rely on a rating service such as the RPI to rank all of those teams. And we would theoretically have 283 teams in that group, which we need to trim down to 64 for week two of our tournament. So in our expanded first week of the tournament, while the other 64 teams rest, here's how you do it. On Tuesday and Wednesday, in week number one of this expanded field, to set our weekend field at 256 teams, we're going to need the worst 54 teams to play 27 games at various sites all day long and eliminate 27 teams. So 283 total teams in this group minus those 27 leaves us 256 to advance and be seeded accordingly to the RPI rank. So on Thursday and Friday of this play-in week one, to get all the teams in the field, we'll have 64 games, 128 teams on Thursday, and 64 games, 128 teams playing on Friday. That's a lot. That's going to require eight arenas in the local area, at local colleges, let's say, and even some large high schools, playing eight games a day from 7 a.m. to midnight, with maybe 10 minutes in between to warm up for the next game. On week number one's Saturday and Sunday games, after we've made that cut, that means there'd be 32 games or 64 teams playing on Saturday and 32 games or 64 teams playing on that Sunday. That would be played at eight arenas with four games a day on the weekend from, let's say, noon until 10 p.m. So let's take a big timeout at this point. After week number one of the expanded everybody in field, the entire 128-team NCAA All-In Tournament field for the remainder of the tournament is now set. It's now time to pit those 64 play-in teams from the first weekend against those 64 well-rested bye week teams. You following? In week number two, like a traditional tournament, on Tuesday we'll have games though. The 32 even-numbered seeded teams from this top 64 group, numbers 2, 4, 6 for example, would play against the 32 winners from the previous Saturday's play-in games. And those games would be played in eight arenas with four games a day, let's say from noon to 11 p.m. Then on Wednesday, on week number two, that same format as Tuesday, except you'll use the odd number seeded teams from the top 64 group, number 1s, 3, 5, for example, playing against the 32 winners from the previous Sunday's play-in games. Then on week two's Thursday and Friday games, you're back to your traditional NCAA 64 teams remaining. The NCAA tournament at this point will continue as it would in a traditional year, two games every week for 3 weeks. And there you have it. With just one extra week, we can indeed have a y'all come type of NCAA basketball tournament. Everybody's in. You just simply have to be willing to do it. Sadly, it won't happen this year, but maybe, just maybe, it should soon. Let them in's what I say. I'm Swamp Swami. Come back and see us.